I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When this stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Rick DeSosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher, and a special, not even a guest, this is his show, damn it. He shows up whenever he wants to because his name is on the front of it. Doc Young has graced us with his presence this morning. And Doc, are you doing a little bit better than Les and I are in the frigid temps of Cincinnati and New York City, respectively?
Well, since me and Les are on the same latitude, we get the same weather. I just get it first, and then he gets it like the next day. But no, I'm doing okay. It's I actually just woke up. I partied a lot last night and ran off with a CNA to the shower room, but other than that, you know, I didn't get any of that.
Was that the women's shower room or the men's?
Oh, it's co-ed. That's how I go.
Oh, well, okay. Then that's why you're spending so much time there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I need like 3-4 showers a day at this point.
Just checking.
How are you guys? I haven't talked to you in a while.
I'm cold.
Yeah.
It is. We had a high of 4 by, or I think we got to 7 by 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, so I'm sure Vic is probably cold too.
I was going to say,
we cracked 20 today, so there's a heat wave going on.
Yeah.
Where are you at, Vic? You're in Pennsylvania?
No, New York, New York.
Oh, that's right, New York. Oh my God, my brain stopped working. All right. Guys, you know, I don't get up early at this time for a lot. Especially even a show with my name on it. Thank you, Les. Because I know that was your idea. But I just wanted to go ahead and announce that.
You're coming out of the closet. No. Okay. Just checking.
Not
funny.
I had this dream once, but that's another story. I do come bearing a message. 2016 is a special year for us here at Wrestling Weekly because it marks our 10th anniversary. That's right. Our very first episode of the show, if you remember, Les, was way back on May 3rd, 2005. With you and I as co-hosts of the website.
That's right. We had our own website at the time, didn't we?
Yeah. I'm not going to give the exact name of that site because we don't own it anymore. I let it lapse and somebody bought it and keeps trying to auction it for $4,000.
Well, we should have bought it and auctioned it for $4,000.
No, because, I mean, it's been years and nobody buys it. It keeps lapsing. And then it buying it again and slapping a $4,000 tag on it. But that's a true story. But
the independent wrestling scene, yes, go ahead.
Yes, when the show started, you know, it was just, you know, about a fan who was an ex-DJ. It was a little weird, a little odd, named Doc Young. And, of course, wrestling legend Les Thatcher, both, you know, speaking the week's news and dealing with guests. It was a two-hour show with one or two guests every week, just depending on how we did it. And in that time, we, you know, we interviewed some top talent. We learned some new things. We settled rumors. And we had a lot of laughs, right, Les?
Yeah, we did. We had, it was, we had some guys that actually stayed, like Heenan came on and stayed over an hour. And he said, he said to me, "When are you going to let me get off here?" And so,
when we made the show, you know, it was days before Skype or before Blog Talk or do-it-yourself podcast type sites existed. And I used very unorthodox methods. Back in those days, sometimes the show was literally held together with duct tape. Les, don't tell me you don't miss those oops, we're off the air moments that we had.
Oh, yes, they were fun.
That would infuriate Les to no end. It was, I don't know, it was just comical.
In the caveman days of Blog Talk Radio, right?
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Blog Talk Radio was probably just some guy's idea, you know, living in his mom's basement or something at the time. But when the show moved here to Figure Four Online, we came with a change format. We dropped it from 2 hour show with two guests to a 1 hour show with no guests. Since we got here, we've been seeing our downloads climbing and climbing, especially in this last year. But we want to make 2005 the best ever for it being our anniversary. So first off, check the show's weekly message board download thread. We're going to put something special in it for you every week. It could be like some old ad or a promo from the old website, or a cool video, or a classic episode, or a classic interview.
Or a classic screw-up.
And messages. Yeah, bloopers. Good idea. And look around the board this year for Easter eggs. I'll pop up here and there in different sections. And everyone has absolutely 100%. No tricks, no gypsies, backsies, no sign-up, free access to ClassicWrestlingWeekly.com. It has almost every episode from 2005 to 2008.
Wow.
All free. Yes. And that's all.
And again, let us remind you that this was back when the transition of the, you know, that everyone, the business itself wasn't opening its arms and saying, we're a work. So there were times that certain people dealt with us or, you know, in a kayfabe manner. And in fact, what was the kid's name that just got let go as the ring announcer with
Justin Roberts.
Yeah.
Justin Roberts.
Doc said, I've got this kid that's going to be a new WWE announcer is going to be on the show.
No, he was already one. He was on
right. Yeah. So he's going to be on our show. I said, okay. So anyway, obviously Justin had very little knowledge of any type of history in the wrestling business. So during his time with us, he kayfabed me. He talked to me like I wasn't smart in the business. And during this time, I'm being a nice guy and not bringing up the point, excuse me, Justin, but I left more professional wrestling knowledge in the bathroom this morning you have to have in a lifetime. And Doc is gritting his teeth and thinking, Jesus, the old man's going to go off on this kid in a minute.
He got
and I did. And I did.
No, you are very restrained, I have to say, call it.
And I am that once in a while. Today I may not be so restrained, but anyway, that's...
yeah, we call that the kayfabe hook. If people started the kayfabe on the show, the interview ended real soon.
Well, when I see when people post when I some people will post on Facebook some of the old Smokey interview segments, and stuff like that, and I realized, my God, the business is set. It was at the time we were still selling, well, I won't say totally, but it was, you just didn't open up and say, hey, this is all a work. The guys, did the promos, not tongue in cheek, but, seriously and stuff like that. That was really the, So if you're listening to this stuff, realize this is during the transition to where, when I had the 3 hour Wednesday night main event here on the Clear Channel All Sports Talk station for 2 years, that was back, in the late 90s. When we brought the boys, I mean, I had Malenko, Benoit, JR, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera on there. We played it as a shoot. We did, even then. And that hasn't been all that many years ago, boys.
If you guys would like to join the anniversary, send us or a show or video, well wish, that you would like to throw into the batch, we'll post it for you too. You can send it or message it to facebook.com/DocYoung, or you can pop it up on YouTube and either use the messenger at facebook.com/DocYoung or the private message system on the board and go ahead and send the link. And the anniversary show, guys, forget it. It's going to blow your mind.
We need to say here, too, that we've gone through several incarnations of co-host, and Vic has been the dude and the mainstay and has made this thing work, too.
Yeah. I want to thank you, Les. I mean, you did the whole 10-year sentence. And I'm not...
Like being an outcast, right?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna ramble much, Les. I love you, and we've been through thick and thin. Vic, if Gene made a machine, you are the Joe who makes the show go. We wouldn't have gotten 2 10-year years without you, man. And all the listeners, every one of you guys has supported us from 2005 until you, listening right now. I love y'all, seriously, from the heart, and I want to thank you for letting us into your iPod, your workout, your commute, or just while you were at your computer. So, 2015, on the lookout for Wrestling Weekly's presence on the board, and happy 10th anniversary, guys. I'm a drop and run, friend. Drop and run.
I love you, my friend. God bless you.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I'll see you soon, man.
That is the great Doc Young, of course, the man who created Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, which is why his name is on the front. And let me just say something else here real quick. Doc touched upon it, but I don't want to let it go without another pop for it real quick. It's absolutely free access to ClassicWrestlingWeekly.com. It's got just about every episode you guys did last between 2005 and 2008. There's a lot of great shows there and a lot of great guests, a lot of interesting stuff available to you for free at ClassicWrestlingWeekly.com.
You know, I know we're going to get into some questions and some stuff you've got on your mind. I just want to mention a couple things here now that Doc's gone and he won't be embarrassed by it. Listen, I appreciate feedback and I appreciate people listening and if they're paying attention. But I need to say a couple things about one of our dear listeners. My cut and paste guy got with me this week and so I said, okay, I've got to say this. Here's the deal. We talked about WWE last week. Please understand, at some point in time, listen, I don't want to belabor it any more than you want to hear it belabored. But at some point in time, I've got to get it out of my system too. Okay? I'd rather talk about the good old days or whatever, but, we didn't have a lot of questions last week. We had to, on the fly, and so we talked about it I don't want to mention something else too. There was some comment about our friend Alice Radley. Let me say this about Alice, okay, unsolicited. She's a friend of the show, and I have respect for her for several reasons, and I'm about to tell you that. So she and I just met in Charlotte this past Fan Fest, and aside from the fact she puts up with my dear friend Jimmy and produces his show, which she deserves a gold star for that, and I love him to death too, but I understand he's even more opinionated and hard-headed than I am. She came into the training. We did the Cornette Experience during the Fan Fest in Charlotte this past year. And by the way, I'm doing the Cornette Experience this next week. But anyway, she came into the training sessions and she said, "Do you mind if I watch? I want to learn," which endeared me to this young lady immensely, because there are so many people who think they already know this business and absolutely do not and need to be where she was at. But she stood there, she said, "I hope I don't get in the way." She stood right off my shoulder there by the ring for a while and she moved around. But anyway, she came to learn about the wrestling business. She came to be educated about the business she was working in. Isn't that amazing? That's kind of a new concept, to actually know what the hell you're talking about.
Nobody does that anymore.
No. But anyway, I mention her on the show and tease, because I like her, because I respect her for that very reason, if for no other. Okay? Because she actually wants to learn the industry in which she has a hand.
I'm going to ask you a question about announcing here in a minute, but the other thing I want to do today, because this show is absolutely 100% free. I know we talked about ClassicWrestlingWeekly.com with some archives there being free for you as well. But since this show here on Figure Four Online or WrestlingObserver.com is free as well, I would be remiss if I did not remind you that this is just one of many shows, 12 to 15 each and every week here at F4WOnline.com or WrestlingObserver.com. And as a matter of fact, if you subscribe, not only do you get this fine show each and every week, but you also get those other 12 to 15 and access to the archives, over 6,000 hours of archived radio programs going back about 10 years plus, as a matter of fact. And that's more content, by the way, 6,000 hours, than is currently housed at the famed WWE Network. So if you're talking about content and wanting to be able to go through stuff and take it with you, whether it's to the gym or it at work or what have you, a subscription here is a pretty solid way to go. And it's only about $10.99 per month. So yeah, you get more stuff than you get at the WWE Network, and you also get access to the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, Figure Four Weekly Newsletter, and their archives as well, which go back many years. So for the price, I mean, you really can't beat that. And Les, one of the things that was discussed on the website this week, as a matter of fact, the statement was released yesterday from WWE, that there's a bit of a shuffling with the announced teams. Starting this week, Raw is going to be they're both going to be three-man booths. JBL, Cole, and Booker T from now on Monday Night Raw. The SmackDown team is going to be Cole, Jerry the King Lawler, and Byron Saxton, who for many years has been behind the scenes sort of learning his trade. He came in to, I want to say it was still FCW when he started training to be a wrestler, but also had a television background in local news, at some local news stations and what have you, and has since transitioned into backstage announcing and commentating for FCW and then for NXT as well. So he's going to get his opportunity here on SmackDown. The pay-per-view team is still going to be Cole, JBL, and Lawler. And I want to ask you about basically the way you broke into announcing and some of the tricks of the trade that you learned along the way. But the first thing I do want to mention, and just in case you want to give him a quick pop as well, is send our best wishes to Jerry the King Lawler, who was not on Raw this week, not because of these impending changes, but because he was hospitalized with a bout of diverticulitis, from which he is now home and recovering.
Yeah, we want to send our best out to Jerry, absolutely. That's, illness is not good at all. And I know, you know, with the heart problems and everything, that on top of it, and I hope he cleans his diet up and his lifestyle a little bit, bless his heart. But yeah, that's, you know, our shout out to him for sure. Absolutely. And I want to mention to those who may be listening to us for the first time, because this is free, is the babbling that we went on with Doc and I this morning is not a normal issue on this program. We actually get into the meat of the things a little bit sooner. But anyway, I always, you know, as a kid, I had a desire to be a rock and roll DJ. And as you know, I've told you that before. I thought, you know, like Wolfman Jack, or if you watch WKRP in Cincinnati, Dr. Johnny Fever, you know, Venus Flytrap, those guys. I used to listen to the black station here because the DJs there had such great rap. Believe it or not, I remember some of that stuff. This is back from the 50s. You know, some of their closing lines or opening, you know, when they opened their particular shows. And it just always fascinated me, and I always thought it was something I liked to do. And I got involved. We built a drag strip here in Cincinnati. I was big into drag racing at the time. I was 15 years old. And a high rock club that I belonged to, along with six other clubs, built Beachmont Dragway here. SOTA, Southern Ohio Timing Association, was the group. And one of the things that I did besides race there was that a lot of the calling the races in the tower. So anyway, it was something that fascinated me. But you know, when I started wrestling, most of your commentators, with few exceptions, were not actually wrestling educated. You know, sometimes they were the local newsman, weatherman, kitty show host, whatever. I do remember in the early 60s, Lord Apple Layton, who was a wrestler, did the television for the Sheik. Started out for Johnny Doyle, who was Barnett and Doyle on the Windsor TV station right across from Detroit, where we taped the TV for that entire area. And then Joe Blanchard, Tully's dad, Tessa's grandfather, wrestled and did some television for Barnett later on. But for the most part, these guys were more about, well, they picked up an extra, I don't know, 25 or 50 bucks for doing the show. A lot of them probably, you know, looked down their nose at, well, I'm a newsman, and looked down their nose at wrestling maybe, and actually spent more time getting themselves over sometimes than they did the product. And it, you know, I know it was offensive to some of the other wrestlers, and I'm thinking, you know, it's got to be more than this. It was, some, you know, but really what actually turned me on to wanting to be a commentator, I guess, was when they brought me into Tampa, into Florida, Championship Wrestling from Florida in 1967, and to award me the NWA Rookie of the Year Award. And I got my first taste of Gordon Solie on the microphone. Gordon and I became friends, in fact, more because not of wrestling, but of both of our loves for racing. Gordon was involved in the Golden Gate Speedway in the area. And, of course, like I say, I was big into drag racing. Eddie Graham's son, Mike, who was still in high school at the time, was big into drag racing. So it was Gordon and I just more bonded over the car thing initially. But Gordon was a completely different bird, you know. He took it seriously. He called it like it was a competitive sport. And I was so fascinated by that. And from the Tampa area, went back into Charlotte. I've been to Charlotte first time in 1963, and went back in 1967. And as it were, my next door neighbor, later on, in the English Village townhouse complex there, was Rudy Kay, who later he and his wife and children lived next door to Dennis Hall and I in the townhouses there. And Rudy and I traveled a lot together. We actually were partners for quite a few times in the area. But, you know, we spent a lot of time just talking, you know, in the cars going up and down the road. And I thought, you know, this maybe being a commentator, you know, doing something with television because of my, you know, love from being very young with the disc jockey thing was maybe to do wrestling commentary, you know. And I say Soli was more the guy who inspired me in that situation, because I saw that there was another side. And, of course, in the Charlotte area at the time, there was a guy named Bob Cottle, who was a newsman, but he also took the wrestling thing seriously. You know, so it was, in contrast to that, Big Bill Ward, who was doing Channel 3 in Charlotte, Bill didn't talk down about the business. But Bill, in his own way, spent more time getting Big Bill Ward over, because he had, you know, he was a personality on Channel 3 there. And sometimes in the midst of a hot angle, Bill was busy wishing old Fannie Mae Smith a happy 82nd birthday, and might have totally missed what was going on there. Anyway, that becomes more important in this story as we go. So anyway, Rudy and his brothers, Ivan the Beast and Leo Burke and Bobby Kay, you know, all family Cormier, started promoting in 1969 in the Maritimes in Canada, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, PEI, and so forth, so on. And it was based in Moncton there, which was near their hometown. So anyway, Rudy contacted me in early 70. And so we'd like you to come up and work the territory for the season. Their season ran from mid-April to mid-October, and then they closed down. But at the time, they had basically what would be called a small network. The TV was done in Halifax, Nova Scotia, but it covered the entire territory. And it was, I mean, wrestling was hot there at the time. It was amazing to me when I went into the territory that I could go, you know, in the bank to get money exchanged, you know, from Canadian to American, and send some home to have a bank officials say, "Oh, you must be a Reds fan. Excuse me, this guy knew who I was." You know, and it was foreshadowing, I guess, really of what the cable television did for wrestling later on, you know, in the States. But anyways, wrestling was over big. And it's all, you know, I went in, it's the only place I ever worked heel. And I went in, of course, if you were an American and of draft age and weren't in the Army, then they looked at you as a deserter anyway. So I was kind of a natural heel to start with, not knowing that till I got there. But anyway, Rudy paired me up with Freddie Sweetan, who was a local guy, and worked the States too, big Canadian boy who was one of the top heels, and we worked a tag team deal, and then eventually we had a falling out, and that's where I was to switch babyface. So, gosh, I don't know, a third of the way through the season, their television guy had a death in the family, and he was, I think, around Toronto somewhere. And so anyway, he was going to have to go home to Toronto, and I have absolutely knew nothing about this. We worked in Moncton on Monday nights, Halifax on Tuesday, stayed over in Halifax, did Halifax TV Wednesday morning, and then went to St. John, New Brunswick. So anyway, on Monday, Rudy calls me at the at the apartment I was renting, and just started shooting the breeze. And please understand that the Cormiers are great rivers to start with. So anyway, in the course of this conversation, he said, you know, when we were going up and down the roads in the Carolinas, you mentioned that, you know, you might have an interest in doing wrestling commentary and stuff. I said, yeah, you know, it's always there in the back of my mind that someday. Well, he said, you know, be sure when we go to Halifax tomorrow to bring a suit and tie. And I said, why? He said, because you're going to get your chance. And at first I thought he was ribbing me. You know, I thought this was some kind of stupid joke that I was going to bring all this stuff and get there. And then the Cormiers are going to have a great laugh, right? Because we did a lot of ribbing in that territory, believe it or not. That's another story. So anyway, that was my first shot. I had never, I mean, I'd been interviewed on television. I'd been on, wrestled on television. I'd never seen a format. I had never cued in or out of a segment. And at the time, you know, there weren't, it wasn't a broadcast team. Most wrestling shows had one person, you know, and maybe a wrestler would slip in or out and it would be interviewed during a match or to add some commentary themselves. But so we go in there Wednesday morning, cold. I've never done anything like this before in my life. To say I was nervous would be an understatement. And I did it. That's how it started.
So the very first time you did it on short notice and with no partner.
Yes. And I had never, you know, other than being interviewed for a couple of minutes, had never done anything like that. And truthfully, how I got through it, I'm not sure, but it was a good show. I mean, you know, I got it done. So, Rudy said, I'm going to need you to do this for a couple, you know, till this guy. So anyway, then he calls me like a week and a half later and he said, look, you're doing a good job. Realized back then you didn't have written contracts. So I was on a per night guarantee or a weekly guarantee. I don't remember which at the time. But, he said, look, he said, I'm going to leave the guy at home in Toronto and I want you to finish up the season as my announcer. As my commentator, I'll add this X amount of money to your, you know, to your weekly. And, I said, sure. Okay, cool. So that's how I got my start. And, you know, when we finished up the season in mid-October, I came back to the States and never crossed my mind, you know, that this is something I would get right back into, less than a year later, maybe, I'm not sure, you know. So I was just going back to wrestling. Well, he had offered, he said, you know, he knew that I had worked, you know, in other facets, you know, helped with program publicity and that sort of thing. So he said, come back in 71 and produce the show, host it. Help me with publicity in the office and this and that. And the other thing, I want you in the office capacity as full, you know, and not necessarily maybe wrestle once in a while. But you realize at that time I'd only been in the business. I'd been wrestling 10 years, half of my in-ring career, basically. So I wasn't ready to hang the tights up. So, you know, I said, nah, you know, I appreciate the offer and I'm still a wrestler. So I went back, you know, to the States. Went into Nashville for a while. Everybody's read Jerry Jarrett's book, thought, you know, that I left because he got the book there. Well, that wasn't the case, but that's neither here nor there. Went to Tampa from there because Leo Garibaldi was one of the bookers and who was also a mentor of mine. And then the Crockett's needed a number two babyface tag team, Becker and Weaver. Becker was the booker. Johnny Weaver has been his partner for a long time. They were the top babyface tag team. And they were calling around looking for a number two babyface team. And Louis Tillette, who also helped Leo in the office, suggested Danny Miller and Les Thatcher. I don't know why. The two of, I guess because we're both Ohio boys or whatever. And, of course, Danny went into the Hall of Heroes in Charlotte with me 2 years ago. And you know, so anyway, we went to Charlotte and to wrestle as a team. And one day I was in the office, and Lord Littlebrook, who had been up in the Maritimes in 1970 with a couple of the other little guys to work, happened to be in the office talking to Mr. Crockett. So Brooke says to Mr. Crockett, this is Jim Sr., why isn't Les, I can't do the English accent, on your, I've been around Nigel all these years, still can't do the English accent, why isn't Les on your television? And Mr. Crockett looked at him and said, well, he's on our TV. No, Mr. Crockett, I mean, as a commentator. Mr. Crockett said, what are you talking about? Oh, he just did a great job for Rudy up in the Maritimes last year. And Mr. Crockett looked at me and said, well, you never told me that. I said, well, you never asked. I mean, I never, it never crossed my mind, you know, to bring it up. And so he said, we'll give you a try. You know, I said, okay, you know. So first, realize also back then, we're talking about 1971, the business was still kayfabe. And although I'm sure, well, I know Gordon was smart to the business, we knew that. But, you know, a lot of these guys were not, I mean, you know, they probably got smart by being around long enough, you know, but they weren't smartened up. And they weren't told finishes, they weren't told angles, they weren't told this is going to happen in the show. You know, and like I say with Big Bill Ward in Charlotte, sometimes he would miss something simply, not on purpose, but because he was in the midst of, you know, wishing somebody a happy birthday or something. And, you know, so my first shot was to sit in with Bill, like as a color guy. And this was, you know, at the time, your major sports were using two commentators, you know, a color man and a play-by-play guy. But wrestling wasn't really the standard in wrestling at the time. So anyway, part of my job was to sit in with Bill. And when of course I knew, you know, a hot angle was going to be worked or, you know, what a finish was going to, you know, a controversial finish on television, something to promote a house show. So my job was to interrupt him if he was in the midst of wishing Fannie Mae Jones happy 80th birthday, and to bring the viewer's eyes to that, what was going on in the ring. And that's how I started the thing with the Crocketts. And then, went to Raleigh, and my first audition there was to sit in with my dear friend Bob Cottle. And, I'll never forget because, you know, back a lot of the guys, And I found out as a play-by-play guy myself over the years, some heels you don't want out there because they're so busy getting themselves over and trying to get heat that they lose sight of the fact there's actually a match going on in the ring. And so, so I went out and did my color spot with Bob, and I'll never forget, the late great Gary Hart was in the back. He was in the territory at the time managing, Hawk and Hansen. Excuse me. And when I came back, Gary said, hey, good job. He said, you didn't do anything to get yourself over, which was a compliment, really, because I guess the guy said, well, he's going out there and put himself over. And I thought, well, that's not my job. And I never have thought, you know, that it ever was. I always figured if you do a good job, that gets you over. That's what got Soli over. That's what got Cottle over. So I got Lance Russell or Ed Capra or Charlie Platt. So anyway, that's, you know, and I'm babbling on and on and on here. And then there was High Point Television at the time as well. Charlie Harville was a guy that was a host there, and Charlie was a on-air personality at the station. I don't remember what the channel or the network affiliation, but I'll never forget that I went up there once with Charlie and sat in, and after it was over, Charlie, with a smile on his face, said, Les, I promised not to be a wrestler if you promised not to be a commentator, because I think Charlie thought that I was, you know.
You were there to take his job.
That, yeah, that they were auditioning me to take his job, which was not the case. But Cottle and I talked, but we did a thing for High Spots back last year when we were in Charlotte, a 90-minute thing reminiscing about working together in Smoky, working together in the Carolinas, you know, and it's just about our, you know, our experiences on, you know, doing wrestling television. And I mentioned that to Bob, and he just kind of laughed about it, too. But so anyway, you know, that was and then the thing with Crockett's, I got involved in the magazine, editing and publishing their magazine. I got involved with coordinating all the promos. We used to do upwards of 125 promo spots, interview spots which were inserts in Charlotte. I mean, in Raleigh, on starting a Wednesday morning and going through, you know, say noon to five or 11 to five, somewhere in there. And I was in, you know, with George Scott at work on putting that whole thing together. And then I was the guy holding the microphone and handling all that too. So anyway, at some point here, you're going to want to ask a question. I'm going to quit babbling on.
Oh, well, now seems like a good time then.
Okay.
You started, like you said, in the Maritimes.
Yeah.
Kind of thrust into the spotlight at the last possible second, but then you went through the remainder of that season, and I would assume at some point you kind of found your groove as a solo act, but then you come down to the Carolinas, and you've got Bill Ward, and you've got the other gentlemen in High Point who are not experts in the wrestling business per se. Then you're also working with Bob Caudle, who is definitely into it and treats it a little bit differently than the other two guys. How did you find the adjustment, not just to the two-man booth, but to guys with varying degrees of knowledge as it relates to the wrestling game?
Well, you just kind of adjusted. You know, it's kind of like working a match, Vic. You adjusted to the guy you're working with. And of course, in Raleigh, I didn't work, honestly, Bob and I worked together, but we didn't work together that much. What did happen there was they dual taped. And talk about antiquated things that nobody even talks about anymore. That, I don't know if it was the only place that did that, but it was the first place I ever saw it done. And that is, they're rolling two reels of tape at the same time, taping the same show, right? Same match, for example. Bob Caudle has a desk on one side of the studio, and he's doing play-by-play on the A tape. And on the other side of the studio, Les Thatcher has a desk, and I'm doing play-by-play on the same show, on the same match, for the B reel, which is going more or less secondary towns. So like Bob's show was Raleigh, Richmond, let's say, I'm not sure of the actual marks, to be honest with you. And then we were doing this, the same show at just a different desk. And so it was a lot of times we'd have wrestlers come out and sit in with us still at that time. So it's just, to me, it was a matter of, honestly, I never thought about it. Just made, you know, you made the adjustments to fit the situation. You know, over the years, and we've talked about this probably before, I was honored and blessed to have worked with Bob Caudle, Gord Soley, Jim Ross, Ed Caprell, Charlie Platt. A lot of people probably listen to this know who the first three are. Ed Caprell was the lead announcer in Atlanta for years, and then he came in with us in Charlotte and Mid-Atlantic. And Charlie Platt and I co-hosted Southeastern on the Gulf Coast, which was taped in Dothan, Alabama. And Charlie was a guy who never left that market and never was nationally known, just regionally known. Regionally, I can't talk. And so, but, you know, I'm blessed to work with all these guys, and everyone was a little different, but everyone was a pro. And I always, to me, when I worked with these guys, I always looked at my role. Even when I did the thing for Rudy, I mean, I never sat down and sat there and tried to analyze it consciously and say, well, you know, I need to be this or be that. But I always looked at it like if I were an ex-football player or an ex-basketball player doing a broadcast, you know, a sports broadcast. And, of course, at that point, when I first did Rudy's show in 1970, I'd already watched ex-football players were being used, you know, on national NFL games on networks. So to me, it was just, I am a participant in this sport, and so I've got to treat it like that, opposed to being, you know, just a play-by-play commentator or a color guy. And like I say, you know, a lot of times still, I'll tell you, I didn't work with a broadcast partner full-time until 73 in Atlanta with Gordon. That was during when the war started between the Gunkel office and the NWA office.
Let me ask you a question with regards to all this wealth of experience you had over the years with so many different partners and so many different places, and yet and still the basics are the basics, but obviously today's product is vastly different. I want to put you in a potential scenario here.
Okay.
The phone rings after you and I get off the air today, and it's Byron Saxton. And Byron's been in the WWE system now 5 or 6 years. He did ECW on Sci-Fi for a little while, but this is really his first shot at the big time. And he says, you know, Mr. Thatcher, this is my first shot here, and it may be the only one, the best one I'm going to get. And yet I realize it's Michael Cole and Jerry the King Lawler and me, so I'm kind of like the third guy in the booth here. But I want to make sure that I make this count. What kind of insight or advice or instruction would you give young Byron as he heads into this major assignment for him now on SmackDown?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing would be that you want to pay attention and listen to those other two guys and add something that they're not featuring or covering, you know, which is really hard, honestly. A three-man booth becomes really tough. Give you an example. When I first went to Atlanta to work with Gordon, then Fred Ward wanted me to come to Columbus, and I can't remember his announcer's name down there. Damn it, he was a good guy too. So we were taping the Atlanta show on Saturday morning, and I was jumping in a car and going to Columbus, Georgia, to do the Columbus show, and I did this about 2 weeks. And but then Fred always had maybe a wrestler come out, right? So Carlisle, I'm trying to think, Jim Carlisle, I'm not sure if that was it or not, but anyway, he was a nice guy, and he was doing it. He was trying to do his job, but I felt like I was just, you know, like for example, they had Wrestling 2 sit in, and he's got to get an angle over and a story over, and I look at myself as a color guy in that situation. And it was just, you know, and it wasn't like Fred would have a wrestler come out once in the hour, once in the show, you know, but it was almost like a different wrestler coming out to get in a free interview or promo during a match. And after 2 weeks, I just stopped going, you know. I mean, I had that much freedom, creative freedom with, you know, the deal when I went in there. I mean, because I was working in the office as well. The whole story about when I came into Atlanta was that I had been injured as a wrestler, but I was still a wrestler, but I was doing this thing with Gordon. And of course, the whole idea was Garibaldi was the booker at the time, and we were going to build to bring me back, which they did in the first ever two-ring battle royal as a wrestler, which I won, in the old Atlanta auditorium. But, so anyway, I just thought, you know, and I told him in the office in Atlanta, I said, I'm going down there, you know, for nothing, because it's, you know, so intent this that they're pushing the wrestler to get his shtick in, and the lead announcer's doing his thing, and I'm thinking you can live without me down here, you know. So working at the three man booth is bad. Oh, I shouldn't say bad. It's hard. It's difficult. And everybody's got to kind of listen to, you know. That's the biggest thing I could say to him is pay attention, and you try to find a niche or feature that these other two guys aren't covering. I was hoping that Art O'Cal, and I forget the name they've got, they've given him another name in WWE, might get a shot at something like that. I know he'd love to do that, but obviously he didn't. But that's the thing. You know, you make yourself fit. I saw a clip the other day, Dennis Brent put it up on Facebook. Dennis used to work in the office in Atlanta, in WWE, WWF. He was helped Jim in talent relations, he and his wife both. And but he had posted the Night of Legends, right? It's the first time that Ross and I had ever worked together. And Ross and I did the opening in-ring. And, you know, you make yourself fit. Now, other than being introduced, Jim and I had never, worked together before. And I've told this story on this show before. I've said it several times, but it was a nice compliment. During the break at the Night of Legends, we go to the back to get a drink, use the bathroom, whatever. And Terry Funk had been watching the monitor, and he said, you know what? He said, man, he said, that's the way wrestling matches should be called. how long have you and Ross worked together? I looked at my watch, said about an hour and a half. He said, oh, bullshit. I said, no, Terry, it's not an hour. And that was it. It was just, these guys that I'm talking about were professionals. It was easy to work with them. And I was, my ego didn't come into play. It wasn't a thing that I had to get my shit in. You know, I didn't have to get me over, which is one of the problems I see with a lot of commentators at every level today, is they're busy getting their shtick in. And it was never that to me. And it was, I don't think it was ever that to Sully or Cottle or Ross. It was about the product. And I think the way we all of us always felt about getting ourselves over was, if we give you valid information about what's going on in the ring, and enhance it a little bit if it's necessary, then that's gonna create a positive atmosphere for us.
Time to take a look at these questions before we wrap this show up, Les. You're always welcome to send us a question either on Twitter. I am at VS1067. And now Les Thatcher has his own.
Oh, my God. I've got 509 followers. You know, let me say this. You know, I don't have a smartphone. I'm not smart enough to have a smartphone. But when I go on my Twitter account on the Internet and see Alice and Lance, and I think, do you guys ever put those phones down, for God's sake? They're busy on there, man. I'm telling you. Before you get into that, too, when I mentioned Alice Radley again, I am doing the Cornette Experience next week with Jim and Alice, and look forward to it. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. So anyway, go ahead with your questions.
Yes, you can send them to me at VS1067 or to the man himself at Les Thatcher on the Twitter machine. You can also send them to my Facebook page. I usually will put something up, setting the word out for questions on my page here on Facebook. You can just type my name in, Victor Sosa, if we are not already friends, and we'll friend you up. You can get in here and post your questions. So, Les, a lot of folks were actually asking. This was the question du jour of the week, and obviously the big show of the week. The New Japan Wrestle Kingdom 9 show at the Tokyo Dome, for which Jim Ross made his commentating return along with Matt Stryker in calling that show on pay-per-view and on the Flips app and a few other places where it is, by the way, still available all month long if you have not had a chance to check it out yet. Fantastic show, and everyone wants to know if you had a chance to see it, and what did you think about JR and Matt Stryker working together?
I did not see it. The wife and I were busy transitioning from North Carolina to Ohio for the weekend, and so no, I did not get a chance to see the show. I saw some of the some of the promos that were done that Stryker did with like the Bullet Club and guys like that, which seemed, you know, more straight up than the stuff that they had him. Of course, you know, I don't know that anybody was in his ear with the New Japan stuff, and of course I realize if you're doing WWE, then you've got somebody in your ear all the time telling you what they want you to say or how they want you to say it and that sort of thing. So, you know, but it seemed to come across, okay, I understand the show was really good. I did not have a chance to see it. I understand I got a shout out. excuse me.
You did, as a matter of fact. Stryker put you over during the tag team match with Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows.
All right. Well, bless him heart. I owe him a drink then, I guess, don't I? I know Dave mentioned, you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago, that in watching current New Japan is obviously so much superior to what he sees on WWE, but yet when he watches the old New Japan stuff, does that make sense? that is even more superior to the current product. And the only thing that I saw the lineup, and I'm not interested in seeing a tag team scramble or four tag teams in a spot fest. That doesn't shake my tree in the least. But I am a big fan of Gallows and Carl. Of course, Carl Anderson is a neighbor. Well, not a next-door neighbor, but he lives here now, and he started with me, as if you listened to he and JR last week, you know. And, I'm a fan of that product more because it's more a competitive product. But, again, I'm not into multiple tag teams at spot fest. And I've used O'Reilly, Kyle O'Reilly and David Richards in our tournament in L.A., And he can work. You know, he's a hell of a hand. You know, I wouldn't really be interested in that, but I you know, I hope to get a chance to check out the rest of the show. And I know you sent me somebody sent me the link to the finish on the main event, which intrigued me because it mentioned that at first the person writing this column didn't buy it, but then once they stopped and thought about it, they realized that it made sense.
Oh, yes, the column that's on the Voices of Wrestling website.
Yeah.
Let me pull that up so I can give that guy a pop, but go ahead and talk about that.
Yeah, well, you know, but that's the thing I think is lacking in the industry across the board today, you know, is the lack of logic, you know, the lack of good angles, good storytelling, you know, or more to the point, I guess, actually, it's not so much you may strike on a good angle, but you don't utilize that. You don't, you know, again, you know, for years and years and years, the standard progression for a booker, if you and I, Vic and Les, are going to work a six-week program, let's say, that booker's going to decide how that program's going to end before he decides how it's going to start, and then books backwards. And I think that's not. And I'm not going to get into naming before my critics start us talking about the current product. I'm not going to get into that. But you can't write a show on the fly. You can't write a show and change it 15 minutes before you go to air, and then realize you've got a big credibility gap or something. You can't do that. You know, and it's just, you know, so I think that's the good thing. They have two bookers, and both are wrestlers, and which is not an amazing concept. It's the way the business has been handled for years and years and years, and it seems to work. You know, I'm curious to see how that product plays out. They are coming back with another pay-per-view here, right?
It's not been confirmed or finalized in terms of United States or North American distribution, but if the returns on this one are promising, I think they would probably like to do one in April.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the other thing, too. You know, if let's say they do for a year, they're going to, you know, if you like the first one, you're going to buy the next one, and you're going to be anticipating it, and you're going to be waiting for it. And it won't be old before it's new. So I that's not all a bad thing either, I don't think.
No, and the article you're referring to, I don't want to butcher this guy's last name, Rich from Voices of Wrestling. Brother, if I tried, I would just hurt your feelings, so I apologize for that. But he wrote an article about the necessary evolution of Kazuchika Okada, who was in the main event against Tanahashi at the pay-per-view, Wrestle Kingdom 9, and just the whole idea that it looked like things were pointing towards an Okada victory, and that would have been the right booking maneuver, and Tanahashi won and retained his title. And for a day or so, Rich could not believe why normally logical booking guys who run New Japan would pick this direction. And then it hit him, and it made a whole lot of sense because Okada's got the rich, spoiled young guy character who's always had everything kind of handed to him, and he's an awesome athlete, and so he makes it work. And this is the first sort of real adversity he's faced, where he was on the precipice of that mountain, and now he's fallen back down to the bottom. And now, does the rich spoiled kid actually have it within him to do what it takes to fight and claw and scratch his way back to the top? And so in looking at it from that perspective, and this article does a much better job than I did in my synopsis, so go out of your way to go find it at voicesofwrestling.com. It's good stuff.
And, you know, I think the key there is the progression, the time it took to build Okada,
yes,
right, to this particular level. It didn't happen in 15 seconds or 15 minutes or 15 days or 15 weeks. You know, that's, again, and I'm not citing, we're not going to talk about current days with the exception that across the board, I think that's the biggest problem with most of the current wrestling in this country is it's everybody's in a hurry. They don't take their time to build.
There's been plenty of great coverage on this website regarding New Japan Tokyo Dome Show. So if for some reason you missed it or want to get a little bit more information on it, you can certainly scroll through all the great audio shows here at WrestlingObserver.com or F4WOnline.com and get full rundowns of what happened at that pay-per-view. But there is another question here, Les. I will throw my two cents in real quick. I enjoyed the show very much. I thought it picked up after those three or four opening tag matches where they were really just, you know, that Tokyo Dome show is typically 5 to 5.5 hours. And with the opportunity to be on U.S. pay-per-view this year, they had to fit it into a four-hour window. And so some of those matches would have normally, any other January 4th, gotten a little more time to tell a story. But those that first hour particular, I thought, was really rushed. And the show didn't pick up until after that. And then the last two or three matches were really just on another level. So all in all, the show was a huge thumbs up that I would recommend to anybody who hasn't seen it as of yet. But Les, one of the questions that came in, since we're on the subject of Japan here real quick before we shift gears, asking who your favorite Japanese wrestlers are or were, past or present.
Oh, my God. You know, currently, Carl Anderson, whose Japanese name escaped me. Of course, I worked with Charlie Tanaka, Tora Tanaka. I worked with Mr. Fuji. I worked with Hiro Matsuda, Duke Iwamuka. You know, Matsuda, of course, was an amazing, amazing worker, shooter, person. Probably he and Fuji and Tanaka probably were the three guys that, and I don't think Fuji is legitimately, I don't know that Charlie was a full-blooded Japanese wrestler either. But those guys, you know, I remember seeing Mitsu Arakawa and Kenji Shibuya as a fan, watching those guys and being, you know, caught up in their heel persona. But I'd say working with probably, you know, when I was in Florida, Matsuda had been the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion. He and Hodge had, you know, had their back and forth thing with the title. And part of the deal when I went down there in 67, the Rookie of the Year, NWA Rookie of the Year, part of the deal was that I'd get a shot at Hodge if I could get past Matsuda, and then that escalated into tag matches with Roger Kirby and I against Matsuda and Ronnie Garvin. And so I spent a lot of time with Hiro and then worked with him also when he was in the Carolinas. So probably to work with, that would probably be my favorite.
Now, there were a lot of, and it's still common today, for the younger Japanese wrestlers to be sent away, usually to someplace in the States or these days in CMLL in Mexico, to get a year or two of seasoning and experience and then come back as find themselves a higher spot on the card in their home promotion in Japan when they come back. I wondered if, another guy who you actually used to wrestle for junior heavyweight titles here when he was young and sent here from Japan was Fujinami. Did you ever?
Yes, I did work with Fujinami. Yes.
Did you?
Yeah, I'd forgotten about it. Yeah, yeah. And it was, you know, I think we had some, I worked with him a couple times, had a couple good matches when he was in the States. You know, here's the tough thing. If the kids today realize they sit down and talk about everything in the locker room, we couldn't do that.
Sure.
Because he didn't speak English. We went out there and had a match by feel, believe it or not. I mean, there were some, you know, some guys that would give, you know, that could speak the language, that would offer, you know, the, you know, tell him, let him know the like the finish and that, this and that, and the other thing. But yeah, we talk about working by feel, baby. I mean, you know, we did, you know. But yeah, I remember working with him too. He was a very talented young man. He was on top over there for a long, long time too.
He was multiple time IWGP champion.
Yeah.
It's interesting this question about announcing came in since we ended up making announcing the focal point of today's show. Your experiences announcing with the Savoldi's ICW promotion.
That was a lot of fun. had good bookers, Kevin Sullivan. Who was a longtime buddy of mine, and we'd worked together in Knoxville office, producing television and booking, and my color guy was Lou Thez, who was talk about bringing a little class and legitimacy to the the microphone, there was a guy that certainly did that. And I enjoyed working with him. I enjoyed those runs. We had a lot of good talent there. It was a lot of fun.
How was it working with Fez the first time? Had he had significant experience as a commentator before this?
I don't know if he had or not, but Lou was a color. You know, I mean, he looked at everything from the technical aspect of it, which was great. You know, and he offered a lot. He was I've always enjoyed my relationship with Lou anyway. I mean, he was a class gentleman, and talk about a credit to the industry. There, you know. He was certainly that in spades. He was, when he first came on board, I obviously had no idea, you know, what to expect. But, I think it's, you know, it's, gosh, I hate to put myself over, but it's being professional, you know, and making the adjustment to, that situation, just same as it is with a good wrestling match. It's, you know, I got an, I won't mention anybody's name because I don't want to embarrass anybody. I got an email this week from a young independent who looks very promising and has been a couple, I've trained with this person several times, and so they stay in touch and ask questions, and they were mentioning that they had branched out in their being booked in a couple different states, but were finding that some of the talent they were working with wasn't up to, you know, to their level, and it was frustrating. And what did I suggest? And I said, well, in that situation, you make an adjustment and try to elevate them. And if you are able to give them a better match than they've had previously, then you've also elevated yourself. And I think, you know, with working with different people on the microphone, it just comes down to that as well, you know. Just in this situation, Lou was, like I say, you know, when it comes to strategy and technique and that sort of thing, it's kind of hard to fault Lou Thez.
That Thez fella doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. Said by nobody ever.
Yeah. Well, they're talking about, you don't want to say that to his face.
Yeah, especially that. Forget it. Les, are you friends or do you know local Cincinnati radio personality Bill Cunningham? I hear him often refer to wrestling, and he mentions that he used to work in the 80s in the tri-state region as a ring announcer.
Now, he may have done that in the 80s here as a ring announcer. I don't know who he would have been ring announcer for, honestly. I'm not saying he didn't, but yes. Bill has a syndicated talk show similar to Jerry Springer, that sort of thing, which is based out of Chicago now. But Bill was on the Clear Channel WLW when I was doing Clear Channel's all sports talk station. I had a 3-hour block there. Excuse me. And I'd run into Bill, and actually he and Brian Pillman were tight. And Bill would pop in at the Pillman Memorials, and always plug the funny, you know, he'd run into me in the lobby or passing by, you know, and he'd say, well, you know, he always told me the same wrestling joke. I forget what it was now, but yeah, he was kind of, well, you know, a lot of the guys there were fans. Joe Nuxall and Marty Brenneman, who did play-by-play and color for the Cincinnati Reds for years and years, and Joe was a local boy here from Hamilton and a pitcher for the Reds, and they were wrestling fans. In fact, when Marge Schott owned the Reds, they had a big cutout. They'd had Savage up in the booth, and she made him get him out, but they had a big life-size cardboard cutout of Randy Savage, and she made him take that down, too. But they always plugged the Pillman shows for me. And a lot of times I run into Marty in the studios, and you know, he would talk wrestling and everything. So yeah, Cunningham was had a show here for years and years and years, and I guess he still lives here as far as I know. But yeah, he and Brian were tight, and Brian used to do his show and actually sometimes fill in for Bill to host the show.
Brian Pillman with a live mic on the radio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's something else.
He was, which I never can remember. Which one of the Harbaughs went to Miami of Ohio, John or Jim?
Oh, don't give me the line. I'll look it up.
Well, anyway, one time when Till was on Cunningham's show, they had Harbaugh father on there, right?
Yeah.
And, of course, Pillman played his football at the same time at Miami of Ohio.
John Harbaugh was.
John, okay. And Pillman told the dad, he said, you know, your kid had never graduated if he hadn't cribbed off of me. Really? Yeah. Honest to God. But, you know, that's the thing, too. I had a couple of the ball players that tell the story that Pillman, you know, had a photographic memory, and he'd go over a test once, and he'd have it. You know, he'd ace it. And these guys would always, they'd fight to get seats near Pillman so they could look over his shoulder to make sure they passed, you know, their test. But, yeah, Brian with a microphone was lethal. But, yeah, he and Cunningham had a great relationship, too.
Last question, Les. What memories do you have of your first match and your last match?
Oh, wow. The last match, I don't know, because I don't remember what that was, because I just, there was never a big deal. This is my retirement. This is my last match. It just happened, you know. It came down to phasing myself out because I thought it was time, you know, not for any particular reason, health reason or anything like that. But, you know, I was so involved in producing television and that sort of thing that and I had been burning the candle at both ends for so many years. I thought it was just time, you know, to ease my way out. And then as I did, I still fill in once in a while. You know, they call and say, well, so-and-so's heard you, bring your tights and I need you to work tonight. Then I just got to wear. I thought, you know, that's crazy too, because I wasn't in ring, you know, I wasn't in ring shape like I normally would have been. So my last match, I'm not even sure who that was with, to be honest with you. My first match is almost 55. It'll be 55 years ago this coming 4th of July, and I remember it vividly. That was, actually I worked twice on that day. It was in Blue Hills, Maine, 4th of July, 1960. And, I worked a single with Cowboy Ronnie Hill, who worked as a Golden Gladiator for the Gunkel promotion and worked around different territories. Ronnie was an old shooter who I also, spent time with at the fairs and carnivals in New England in 60 and 61. And, then in the main event, it was a 4th of July celebration at a fairgrounds in Blue Hills, Maine. And the second match was Bull Montana and Joe Sasso. Joe was played football at Boston U. He was kind of built like the Bruiser and had more of a Pat O'Connor look. But anyway, and then Joe and I came back in the main event against Ronnie and Bull. And, wow, that's been on. Well, it will be 55 years ago this next month that I got on a Greyhound bus here in Cincinnati and went to Boston to start my career.
And how much did the ticket from Cincinnati to Boston on Greyhound cost back then?
I don't even know. I know it was like 21 hours.
Oh.
My bus, that's like 1,000 miles. And then I made the bus trip back, and then I took my car back. When I went back, I came home for Christmas in 1960, and then I took my car when I went back in 61. The only other Greyhound bus trip I took was due to my dear friend Jim Dillon being thrifty.
Oh, no.
Yes. We were working the Charlotte territory, and we had to go to Richmond, Virginia, and then we were going from Richmond to Roanoke. And Jim called, and he said, instead of us driving, he said, Sandy Scott's going to be up there with two open seats in his car, and he's got Richmond. He was Norfolk on Thursday. We were someplace else. I don't remember. And he said, and he's going to Roanoke, and we can ride across to Roanoke with him for Saturday and then back in home. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, well, okay. What he didn't tell me, of course, I don't think he knew, was that this stopped in every crossroads in North Carolina and South Central Virginia before it got to Richmond. And we were on that. I thought, never again, Jim Grabmeier. I mean, Jim Dillon, am I going to do this? But anyway, yeah, that was the last time I was on a Greyhound bus.
Now, he wasn't your was he your tag team partner that night, or was he an opponent?
Dillon, no, he was probably my partner.
The last thing you would have wanted to be was your opponent after that trip.
Yes. But I remind him of that once in a while, too. You're the one who put me on it. Like I say, and it stopped at every whistle stop in North Carolina. But after all this big snow in Buffalo, I remember that the Greyhound in 1960 going to Boston, stopped in Buffalo in February, and I remember thinking, oh, my God. I don't know if at the time if I'd seen that much snow. Of course, once I got to New England in the winter, I got a chance to see that and plenty more. But that was my first experience with Buffalo, and it was 1960. Well, I'd been up there with some friends of our family to Niagara Falls as a kid when I was like 9 or 10, but I remember that trip. But, yeah, that was... 1960 was a big year. God, and I said to somebody the other day, I said, here's over half a century, and probably at that time I was 19 years old, I didn't think much past the next day.
I mean, yeah, really, when you think about it, who would have known? You know, I mean, who could know at 19 where it's going to take you like that?
Right. No, it's been a hell of a trip. It has. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wouldn't.
So we've been talking about this weekend now, what you got coming up this weekend, for the last month or two. So I imagine you're probably pretty excited about this, the stuff you got going on starting tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I am excited. I'm not sure in terms of turnout or everything. But yeah, starting tomorrow, I'm going to be doing three training sessions a week, Saturday from like, say, 10 to 1. Now, tomorrow is pretty much a whole day thing. And then Tuesday and Thursday evenings, probably 6 to 9, 6:30 to 9:30, something like that. And three sessions a week. Got some guys coming in from Tennessee for the 16th and 17th of this month. And this is not just for beginners or local indie guys. This is, like I say, and then I'm talking to some people from West Virginia that may come over in February. A couple of the guys from the Monster Factory talked about wanting to come down and spend a couple of days. So it's if you've been in the business 10 minutes or 10 years, I'm available, And I'm kind of looking forward to it. We're at the CWIA warehouse in Hamilton, Ohio, right across from the Butler County Fairgrounds, 1930 Fairgrove Avenue. And if you're interested, you can contact me, Les, at epwt.com or Les Thatcher at zoomtown.com. And three training sessions a week. And then the Christian Wrestling Association, they run a monthly show. It's an afternoon, it's a matinee, like from noon to 2, 2:30 on Saturdays. And then this month, that's going to be the 17th. And it's a free show. It's free. And my hope is to, help elevate their product and their athletes, as well as, help out whoever, shows up and help the business. That's what it's up. But, I'm excited. It's a new venture and something I haven't done in a while. I haven't done any training around here. Oh, wow. I guess since I was doing once a week over at the HWA that I sold, where I first, where I started working with Ambrose and some guys. So I haven't done anything, like this full time since I sold the company in 2002. So it's fresh. It's fresh for me, but I'm still available to haunt houses and do weekend training camps, and look forward to doing, going back to the Monster Factory and back with Antonio Thomas up at Ringsport, and Woody down in Deep Southern Championship Wrestling in Georgia, and and Tony Gibbons up at NWA Smokey, and the companies that I have got a good working relationship with. So anyway, and of course we need to mention Charlotte.
That's right.
July the 30th through August the 2nd. This will be the 11th annual NWA Mid-Atlantic Legends Fan Fest. the first showing of Greg Price's Mid-Atlantic Memories documentary, of which I have a small part. I'm not sure how much of got edited and left on the cutting room floor. But anyway, we're doing another four-day camp, $319. Get you the camp and the banquet and all the other things going on there. And, of course, the Four Musketeers from last year will be back in harness. Dr. Tom Pritchard, Nigel McGuinness, Lance Storm, myself, we're with the addition of Rip Rogers, who's been the lead trainer in OVW for years and is a hell of a trainer. And, of course, Jerry Briscoe will be there looking at talent for WWF or WWE and giving us his 2 cents worth as we go. There are shows Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. If you are a wrestler, it's also a chance of winning a $2,500 Reed Flair Memorial Scholarship and be seen by promoters that... you know, give you a chance to network with new promotions, with other wrestlers. We had 44 young people in attendance last year from as far away as Scotland and England. And it's if you can't learn from this crew, man, you can't learn. I don't know what you know. And we had some, you know, Chase Owens and of the NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion and Rhett Titus, who you know is a mainstay with ROH, stole the show on Saturday night. You get a chance, you know, the better some of the people get a chance to work these shows, be seen by other promoters. So it's a good, you know, it's a good investment of your money and your time, for sure.
And of course, next week, you're also going to get a chance to hear the dulcet tones of the great Les Thatcher as part of the Jim Cornette Experience.
Yes.
Over at MLWRadio.com.
With Jim, it's always an experience. No matter that what you true. Call it, I'm looking forward to it. Jimmy is like part of the family. I've known him since he was shooting pictures at ringside. I guess we first met in 1978. Wow, that's a fur piece back, my friend.
Oh, fur piece, you
yes,
say?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And yeah, and then we're going to record probably a day early. Next
whatever
week.
You need, I can do that.
Yeah, or a couple of days, maybe, because I've got the guys coming in from Tennessee to work with.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes.
And so, anyway, I'll get with you on that in terms of day. And we may have to do Wednesday because the wife, I think, has a doctor's appointment Thursday morning, and then I've got
true.
Training Thursday. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I'll get with you on it.
We'll play it by ear. We'll figure
all
it
right.
out.
So we won't take 10 years like this show has run to figure it all out. Well, I'm going to the gym, Vic.
Well, you know what? That sounds like a damn good idea, except there's a problem. When I get in the car and I head out to the gym, I actually have to pass the pizza buffet first.
Uh-oh.
And sometimes I have to admit I make the turn, Les. I can't help myself.
Well, I don't have to pass anything. It's less than a mile from my front door, my friend.
And, oh, Lord. You see, you're just lucky. All right. So I'm going to let you go lift some weights. You can hear him next at the Jim Cornette Experience podcast, MLWRadio.com. Les, please give the lovely Alice Radley all my love when you speak to her.
I will do that.
And I hope you all have enjoyed this fine edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. Les and I will be returning next week with another edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. Your questions, again, you can reach us at Twitter, at Les Thatcher, or at VS1067. Your questions are a big part of the show. We enjoy asking them on the air as well, so feel free to contribute to the program in any way you see fit by asking any of those questions, and we'll get them on the air for you next week. He is the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thanks once again for taking time out of your weekend to hang out here with us at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly.